friend in me. You got a friend in me. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
This month, week, I can never remember. We're talking about Disney. The modern age of Disney, in fact. Are we talking about the whole of Disney? Let's start again.
No,
I don't know what we're talking about.
We're talking about the modern age of Disney. Carry on.
We're talking about the modern age. Good, okay. We're currently in GB's drinking Buxton Yellow Belly, which is...
Arguably... one of the best beers I've ever tasted in my life.
Arguably one of the best beers I've ever tasted. And there's no argument that it is the most expensive beer I've ever bought. But it is insane.
That's okay, because that's what you do in January.
Yes, that's what you do in January.
After Christmas.
After Christmas, you know, months afterwards.
Yeah,
you
it's
know.
Cold, it's dark.
Yeah, trees down. Yeah, it's weird. Like, do you have a good one?
What, a good Christmas?
Yeah,
no, honestly, best one ever.
Good turkey?
Yeah, Elton showed up.
No, he didn't.
Well, he might.
No, he did.
No, he didn't.
Right, I think we've done this bit for long enough. Should we do the episode?
Let's.
And as the years go by.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
We're picking up where we left off at the end of our last animation episode, where we did cell animation, traditional hand-drawn animation.
Yes.
Which is available on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's true. It's true.
And it's our back catalogue, so just go and listen. It was only, like, summer.
Is that one of the ones we did the small vinyl pressing for?
Very small, yes.
Yeah.
They're so small that we need to invent a minified record player to play it on.
Yeah.
And you need a needle that is actually only one molecule thick. It's one micron.
Wow.
Yeah.
Add it to your Christmas for next year. Add it to your Christmas for next year. Because Christmas has come and gone. Ignore this song in the background.
Yeah, I can't believe that they're still playing this music in January.
It's a shame the CD got stuck in the
player. Some places just have no shame.
It gets earlier and earlier every year, doesn't it?
So, we're talking about specifically Disney.
Disney.
And animation in the later stages of Disney.
Right.
So, post-cell animation.
Right. What's the... give me a timeline in terms of films. What's the first film we're talking about?
Let's say we're going to skip over all the origins of Disney.
Right.
It's the 1980s.
Ooh, nice. I've got big shoulder pads. I'm coked up to the eyeballs.
So, it's Tuesday then.
Oh, you said the 80s. Sorry, I thought you meant... I thought you meant 8 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Walt Disney had died in 1966.
Yes.
And they froze his head, I think, didn't they?
Is that a thing? I think that's an urban legend. So I don't know. Let's say they did.
I mean, there's all sorts of shit in the back of my freezer.
Oh, I put that leftover bolognese in it.
Chili con carne from two houses ago.
The head of the world's biggest entertainment corporation.
I'm not saying it's in
the head of my freezer. Head of the world.
I'm just saying that there's probably a cryogenic company somewhere where they're like, what's this? It's gone a bit green. Yeah. That's Disney.
There's an Eisner somewhere that's got a Disney head in the back of his freezer. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
To be fair, he probably has a couple of them because Disney was a family operation.
Yeah, indeed.
We're about to enter what I suppose most would consider to be the dark ages of Disney. And by that I don't mean the anti-Semitism or the witch trials and all of that.
It was
commercially
when it was
Disney
rubbish.
Was going through a rough patch.
Fox and the Hound and Oliver and Company and all that kind of stuff.
They'd hired and lost an entire kind of graduating class of CalArts animators.
Right.
Including Don Bluth.
Yes.
Who basically came and went in 1979. Generally speaking, the biggest problem that Disney had was they were still trying to run like they were an animation house from the 50s.
And it
was now the 80s, and everybody was coked up and had shoulder pads. Mm. But more importantly, wanted to do animation differently.
Yes, of course.
Disney had fired and let go. I mean, after the Don Bluth, he took his team and set up a competing studio, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But Disney had also fired animators for wanting to be too creative.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Animators that are now household names. So we've got the likes of Tim Burton.
Yep.
Was an animator for Disney at that time.
He did a lot of the animation for Fox and Hound.
He did. And he wanted to make a short called Frankenweenie that he then eventually did make as a feature.
With Disney.
Funny enough, when you're a millionaire movie director producer who
they
can command audiences, they're a bit more forgiving. Let's get the elephant in the room out of the way.
Yes.
A chap called John Lasseter.
Yes.
Who most people will know as being kind of the head of Pixar.
And the guy that brought Pixar to the fore, essentially.
Effectively.
Well, him and Steve Jobs.
Now, the reason that we're talking about the elephant in the room is, if you're not aware, John Lasseter was released from Disney in 2017. Amidst allegations of sexual misconduct.
Yeah, he resigned, admitting that he had acted inappropriately.
In his word, I made a few missteps.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, to be fair, on the scale of inappropriate, he's probably towards the lighter end, but still.
Yeah, but still inappropriate, yeah.
So that makes us the only person to ever get fired from Disney twice.
Yeah, actually.
We are going to talk quite a bit about Lasseter, because obviously Pixar play a massive part
kinda
in Disney's modernisation.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So what we're basically going to do is just kind of like focus on the work and the impact and
not
the
business of erasing history. That would be insane.
That at the same time,
and Pixar inexplicably were really popular.
At the same time,
nobody directed Toy Story.
That does not mean, and it bears stating, that we condone any of that kind of behaviour.
No, of course not.
Indeed, quite the opposite. Mm. And if you want to, we can record an entire rant where Mike and I just get really angry at the world. But well, we might just
We've
put
got
that
one
in
of
the
them
bloopers.
From last month, haven't we?
Every other month we get one. To be honest. Yeah. Anyway, so. Yeah. That said, by the time Eisner took over Disney...
Yes, Michael Eisner. Yes,
Michael Eisner took over as CEO. The animated feature arm of the business was actually probably the least profitable.
All right.
They made a shit ton of money on TV shows.
Sure, ABC.
The parks were doing really well. Yeah. Eisner actually considered just killing them off.
Really? The film was entirely?
Yeah, the feature film arm would just go, because they were ridiculously expensive, and they weren't making any money.
Yeah. Because, the 80s and 90s is very much like all of the Lion King... Well, the 90s. But like
this is the
80s. Right, okay. They're still trying
original properties. A lot of people basically thought that Disney was near rock bottom, and it's generally agreed that Disney hit rock bottom in 1985 when they made The Black Cauldron.
I was about to say, when did that come out? Yes, indeed, yeah.
The Black Cauldron basically cost $44 million to make.
In 1985?
Yeah, and grossed less than half of it.
So... As we spoke about in the last episode, Frozen only cost $150 million, so it only cost three times and made 1.3 billion quid.
Mm-hmm.
Plus of 50 million they did, yeah, wow.
On the plus side, Disney now know what winning looks like. Although they did previously know, but up until this point, all of the Disney movies that we watched had been made using hand-drawn and hand-coloured cells.
Yes.
And fair enough. There was a whole bunch of stuff about how they transferred the drawings and there were updates in the technology there.
Mm-hmm.
It was still a totally manual process.
Wow, okay. And that is because they wanted to hold on to this traditional aspect of doing it? They just weren't changing with the times?
Partially because, let's face it, computers in the 80s weren't good.
Sure.
It was easier and more reliable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you've got people like Lasseter who originally was fired because he just kept banging on about computers of the future.
He went round management to talk to the animators to say...
He was trying to get them to build this software and use tools that he'd built.
Yeah.
And that the guys at Pixar had built, as we'll see. Pixar was a thing way before Lasseter joined.
Yeah.
All of this changed in around about 1989. Disney saw the writing was on the wall. They had decided to go back to what they do best, which was musical adaptations of fairy tales.
Sure.
And they introduced a system called CAPS.
Ah, yes.
Computer Animation Production System.
Yes.
The first movie to use CAPS is actually, in part, The Little Mermaid.
Right, okay.
And The Little Mermaid was a massive critical success.
Yeah,
it won two Academy Awards.
It was, that was massive. I remember when that came out, it was massive.
And CAPS was brought in as a trial, and there's only two or three scenes that actually made it into the final cut that were done on computer.
Is that because of the underwater stuff?
It was the big one is the last scene of the movie.
Right,
they sail off in a boat under a rainbow.
Right, okay.
And that is all done on this new computerized system.
Right, okay.
What CAPS basically let animators do was, rather than having to outline on a cell and then have it coloured and then overlay and build out, if you want to know how all this works, whole episode about it, 6 months ago, I'm not sure about that. CAPS let animators draw the outlines on computer.
Yeah.
And then basically paint bucket fill them, like flood fill, with a combination of either solid colour or gradiated colour.
Yeah.
They could set the gradients. All this stuff sounds really obvious to us now. We're like, I've got paint, but this is 1985, when we still had paint.
But it allowed them to move... to essentially move the camera, if you imagine it like that.
This is the thing, is you're no longer restricted
because they had to animate all the background.
To the physical limitations of the composite.
Yeah.
And that was always the big problem that animated films had. You had to cut to a different viewpoint, not because it was dramatically correct to do so, but just because you'd run out of room. This, bizarrely, Disney had never really been massively fussed about that as a limitation.
Sure.
Look at, there's a couple of shots from Pinocchio where they've got multiple layers in composite and parallax, and that's all done by hand.
Jesus.
And it's this swooping shot down the street.
Right.
It's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
But this removed, this technology removed all of those constraints.
Yeah.
And that shot in Pinocchio probably cost hundreds of thousands to make.
Half the budget or something.
And now they're like, well, yeah, we don't have to be limited anymore.
Yeah.
So we can do dolly work, we can do tracking shots, we can do all that good stuff. The other thing it introduced was the concept of transparency.
Mm.
Because one of the things about cell animation was transparency was very hard to reproduce.
Right.
Get the same level of alpha, effectively.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do it on a computer, you can say this is 0.8 see-through.
Yeah, yeah.
The final element that CAPS brought to the table was, because it was a computerized system or a series of components, it meant that this emerging concept of 3D models could just be composited straight in.
Yeah.
That it, previously you would have had to print them out and photograph them and what have you. And CAPS, basically, the end output of CAPS was a whacking great screen that was photographed onto film.
Yeah.
So anything that could go on that screen could go in the movie.
Yeah.
As we will see. Mm. The first film to use it in its entirety was The Rescuers Down Under.
Sure,
made in 1990.
Yeah, yeah. I love that movie.
Which is stunning.
Yeah, it really is.
Again, visually stunning.
Yeah.
Can't say I rate it as a story. It's a bit tear-jerky, to be honest.
Sure, no, fair enough.
The Albatross, really, don't know what's going on there.
Are the Fievel movies, they're not Disney, are they?
No.
No, they're Warner Brothers or something.
Well, Mouse Tale.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Disney, basically, by the middle of the 90s and moving through the 90s, realised that this was the future of animation.
Right, yeah, sure.
They did still have a bunch of the old guard.
Right.
But they had them because they knew how to make things look good, move right.
And it's still the Disney look and feel that they still needed to have, so they still needed a certain element of the old guard to kind of, be able to do that,
And I think a lot of it is the realisation that actually the medium became less important than the content.
Okay,
Which, considering how much time you spend with the medium when you're doing animation,
is
quite a big jump to take.
Yeah, it's true. Because that's it, right? So, like, you know, a lot of those movies like Snow White and things like that, those movies were so... the medium was so incredibly difficult to do, essentially, that it was... almost more important kind of thing.
And this, I think, is why it took Disney so long to actually embrace computerization. Also, the fact that they wanted to make sure, to a degree, they could achieve the same level of quality that they could achieve with hand-drawn.
Like, we built all of this on this, so it's got to be really good if we're going to try something else.
In 1991, we get Beauty and the Beast.
Of course,
Beauty and the Beast being the first Disney film to introduce a 3D rendered element.
Which is the ballroom when
the
they're
ballroom
dancing.
Waltz
scene. The camera swoops down around them.
Yeah, so you get basically the camera dollies around them in full 3D space, which would have been doable in hand-drawn, but very, very difficult.
Yeah, very
And would have been impossible to use that 3D rendered environment, which, let's face it, looks a bit shit when you watch it now.
It does.
But, you know, it was a landmark moment.
Yeah,
and frankly, that film is still delightful.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The live-action remake, arguably more so.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any of the live-actions.
Beauty and the Beast is amazing. Aladdin is good. The Lion King is not.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Looking forward to Mulan, which actually promises to be quite dramatic.
It'll be very action-y, hopefully, as well,
yeah.
Given all the battles and stuff.
Well, you'd hope. Yeah. Anyway, ironically, Beauty and the Beast, they had this massive landmark moment. They spent so long doing it that they ran out of time to actually animate the last dance between right. Belle and Prince Adam.
Yes, of course.
Ah! Ah, throwback to 2 weeks ago, and I didn't know who he was. It feels like only 10 minutes ago. And they actually reused the final dance sequence between Princess Aurora and Prince Philip from Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, really?
Okay. Totally reused it.
Right.
Like, same reference, same movement, everything, just updated the characters
There's
and away you go.
I mean, that is classic Disney
for
years.
Well, no, they do it, but in this case, they did it because they basically ran out of time.
Yeah, wow, amazing. Incredible.
1992's Aladdin contains another notable example where he flies out of a CGI cave on a magic carpet.
Yes, of course.
Again, the animation there is terrible.
Yeah,
it was on the big screen, I must admit. I think I went to see that one as a child in the cinema.
I remember going to see my dad's room to see that. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And, of course, we then have probably the reference moment for Disney and CGI.
Mm-hmm.
1994's The Lion King.
Right.
And the Wildebeest Stampede.
Of course, yes.
Go on.
I was going to say, when he falls in the dust.
Yeah.
And he says SFX, and everyone said it says sex. Because that's the thing.
The Wildebeest characters were actually created in a 3D modelling program.
Okay.
They were then multiplied into their hundreds.
Right.
So they're all the same Wildebeest.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Like, copy-paste.
Yeah, yeah.
They were cel-shaded
that's
to make them...
That's how they do crowds now, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. They were cel-shaded to make them look like they've been drawn.
Wow, okay.
And they were basically then programmed with randomised paths down the mountainside to simulate the real and unpredictable movements of a herd.
Right, yeah.
And it was one of the first major examples of a technique that we'll come back to called flocking.
Yep, okay.
Which,
yep.
I mean, it's not Disney, but Lord of the Rings.
Sure, yeah.
No, pretty much anything where you see the camera pulls out and you've got a massive ton of people running. Yeah, Lion King did it kind of first.
My brother, who works at a post-production house, a visual effects house, they scanned, 3D scanned, all of the employees of the company. So when they have visual effects to do of crowds, they use flocking, copy and paste them, and all the people in the crowd are the people that work there.
So how many movies is your brother in?
More than, I don't really want to say
no,
names,
no, that's
but,
fine.
But movies you've heard of, movies you have definitely heard of, it's very funny.
In this case, the Wildebeest Stampede took 5 specially trained animators and technicians working on it, right. And they spent more than 2 years creating 2.5 minutes.
So the normal production of a Disney movie, a modern Disney movie, is 2 years, between a year and 2 years. So
they spent 2 years on
just
2.5 minutes of Wildebeest.
Just doing all them cows.
Wildebeests?
Wildebeye.
Wildebastards.
Wildebastards, yes, of course.
At this point...
That's the best thing we've ever said. Wilder bastards.
At this point, we've kind of got to jump sideways a little bit, and we have to start talking about...
We've got to get out of the way of the wilder bastards.
Well, yes.
Yeah,
exactly. And we've got to talk a little bit about Pixar.
Yes.
Because they're going to play quite a significant part in our story moving forward.
Yeah, they will, yeah. Whereas Disney will just go, we'll just do that. How much is that? Oh, we'll buy them. We'll just do that.
Pixar had actually been around since the 70s.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know they were that old. Wow. But they started as a lamp manufacturer. Oh, you could have said that in a good lie.
No, there's no Eiffel Towering in here.
Yeah.
They'd basically spent their relatively early years working with Industrial Light and Magic.
Right.
Sorry, ILM.
Yeah.
Because in the biz.
Yeah, you know. Industrial Light and Magic for the layman.
Creating
very
specific special effects sequences for movies.
Right, okay.
Including things like the Genesis effect in Wrath of Khan.
Yes, okay, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Where the Genesis bomb is sitting there and it's going and then on the planet.
Yeah, like the terraforming kind of effect.
Yeah, all that 3D effect.
That's Pixar. Wow.
And the stained glass knight in Young Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, okay, yeah.
Arguably the best bit in what is still an amazing movie, but let's face it, not a good movie.
Yeah, well, so that's Pixar, that's interesting. Yeah.
And Pixar had actually made a large part of the software that became Caps that Disney bought.
Oh, really? Okay, right, okay.
Because they were basically making little bits and making tools to do little bits and then selling them on.
Is this Jobs era Pixar?
No, this is pre-Jobs.
Right.
In the early 90s, Jobs had invested, and then invested again, then invested again, and then pretty much bought them.
Then announced he was in charge.
To the point, well, no, he didn't have to announce it. He owned so much stock. Yeah. He put $50 million into the company.
Oh, wow.
That he was by far the largest shareholder. So basically, he controlled the company. And Pixar made a deal with Disney to do basically three computer animated feature films.
Right.
The first of which...
Toy Story. Yeah.
Now, the trouble is, Toy Story was a turning point for everything in this this tale.
Yeah.
It was, interestingly, a survival moment for Pixar.
Toy Story is a turning point for everything in the film industry, I think, as well. By the time it came out, I mean, do you remember the wave of Toy Story mania? That, you know,
it was,
I don't know, I said that like I was joking, but it really is.
No,
it
was insane. Weirdly, just before the release of Toy Story, Jobs was looking to sell Pixar.
Right.
And just try and recoup some of his investment.
Yeah.
And it was only when he got a call from a critic in New York who'd seen a pre-screen, who'd said, this film is going to be huge.
It's going to be important,
That he stopped, he backed off.
Yeah.
He was actually seeking buyers for the company.
Can you imagine?
Obviously, massive success. Mm. It is the coming of age for CGI in films. It's the coming of age
and
for...
And I don't think it looks dated, really.
Well,
there are places it looks a bit dated, but I think mostly
the interesting thing about the reason that Toy Story was made was because at the time that they made it, so it was 95,
right? Yeah.
And at the time that they made it, the technology wasn't good enough to do more complicated CGI,
right? Okay,
which is why a lot of the characters are actually they're solid shapes.
Yeah, I'm a pig,
and they're quite simple.
Yeah, they're like money boxes. They're the pig money boxes.
In 3D terms, we'd call them like they're collections of primitives.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Woody's hat is a disc
with
a cylinder on top of it.
But
and obviously later on,
they
become much more nuanced and what have you.
Of
but
course,
go back and watch the first one, and they put a lot of work into it. I'm not saying that they phoned it in, but the reason that Toy Story was made as the first Pixar project was because it was the one they could
they
make.
They physically could make, makes sense. Is Toy Story 4 good? Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it yet.
No,
so, we now get into a fun old bun fight between two very rich wankers. Steve Jobs and Michael Eisner.
Famously lovely people. Famously.
Both lovely people all.
Yeah, indeed.
And they basically went round and round. Michael Eisner, by this point, is the chairman and CEO of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And they had... Well, the arguments are all commercial and quite dull.
Michael Eisner wanted all the credit for Disney for things like Toy Story, and Steve Jobs was going, fuck you, Pixar did it.
Yeah, but also the commercial terms under which Pixar were producing these films, they had no sequel rights, they had no character rights.
Oh, wow.
And they had to fight, they were fighting to get those back for Toy Story.
Wow.
Because Disney owned them.
Right.
Because they did all the distribution.
Yeah.
But... Classic thing, when you're making a movie, you know this, but they may not. Distribution is one portion of the pie. Obviously, production and actually making the thing is quite another large bit. And then you've got merchandising and sundries and the rights to make any sequels.
Yes.
Disney took care of one bit of that, but wanted all of the money.
Right.
And all
sounds
of the credit.
Like Disney, yeah.
Well, it sounds like Eisner.
Yeah.
That's a cockwomble.
It is honestly my favourite thing about... when the live-action movies started to be made, people being like, well, it's just Disney doing stuff for money now. Oh, yeah, because famously they've never...
traditionally they were just altruistic to the end.
They've always been so such a lovely group of lovely
£25 a Blu-ray. Anyway.
They just do everything for money now. They ruined Star Wars.
The relationship between Disney and Pixar actually broke down completely in 2004.
Sure,
to the point that Disney formed their own CGI animation studio called Circle 7.
Right, okay,
Is which,
this when Eisen left and Bob Iger came back in?
We'll come on to that.
Right, okay.
Circle 7, hilariously, did a whole bunch of work on Toy Story 2,
right.
Monsters, Inc., early production stuff, so research and what have you.
Yeah.
But it's also pretty much in the record books as the shortest-lived animation house ever.
Right.
Because Disney COO Robert Iger had realised that Eisner was on the way out, and he'd been to a parade in Japan, a Disney parade.
Mm.
And realised that all of the characters he was seeing were Pixar characters.
Right, okay, yeah.
None of the traditional Disney characters.
Yeah, it wasn't Mickey and Goofy and stuff, yeah.
And he then came back and commissioned a financial survey across the entire of Disney, an analysis, and he confirmed that Disney had actually been losing money on animation for the past 10 years.
Wow.
they made it back on merchandising, on distribution, all the rest of it, but the actual, you know, as a cost center, it was a waste of time.
Yeah, it is a thing of, like, Michael Eisner was such a powerful person for such a long time, but he wasn't actually terribly good at running the company.
So Iger presents these
Should
numbers.
Be careful talking about the arguably the most litigious people in the whole world.
It's fine.
With small potatoes, it's fine.
I've already called him a cockwomble.
It's true.
Iger, first meeting as CEO, first board meeting, he presents these numbers, yeah. And his follow-up was, we need to buy Pixar.
Yeah, sure.
So they did, on January 25th, 2006.
Right.
Bear in mind, 2004, they were not talking.
Yeah.
And in 2006, Disney acquired Pixar for $7.4 billion.
Nice.
It was an all-stock deal, so no cash.
I feel like Disney are having a bad time of it, but could still buy Pixar for $7 billion.
They've got a lot of stock.
Yeah, yeah.
It did mean that Steve Jobs immediately became the largest Disney shareholder in the world.
Really?
He overtook
Eisner.
Bigger than
the Disney family.
Bigger than the Disney family.
Wow, they really wanted
the largest individual.
Individual, okay, yeah, yeah.
So the Disney family probably hold more in general terms.
Well,
but yeah.
Through a lot of shell corporations of trust that you wouldn't understand.
No. So if we go briefly, let's circle back to Disney. Because in 2005, Disney released its first fully computer animated feature film.
Right.
Do you know what it is?
2005, fully animated computer feature film. New Atlantis?
Mm-mm.
No, I don't know when the hell that came out. I'm going to go with, no, I don't know which one it is.
Chicken Little.
Is that a Disney film?
Yep.
Wow.
And, you know, that reaction says it all.
Yeah.
Again, a milestone for the company. Commercially, a bit of a meh moment.
That's a Hans Christian Andersen thing.
I think originally, yeah, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I've got in my notes, the film was a moderate success at the box office.
It's like all no Disney movies really, 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 really bomb. Well, apart from John Carter. But yeah, it's always a bit like, kids will always want to see an animated movie about a laughing chicken.
Yeah.
But, nah.
At which point, Pixar acquisition goes through. The aforementioned Lasseter joins the team.
Yeah.
Renames Walt Disney.
Renames Walt Disney?
He renames the Walt Disney Picture Corporation to the Walt Disney Animation Studio.
Oh, wow, okay.
So he's got some clout.
Yeah, fucking hell.
And,
I mean, he was...
Hugs everybody, yeah. Inappropriately.
Oh, boy. Makes a lot of people feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but... They then committed to producing a new regime of movies,
right.
That were a mix of hand-drawn,
right.
And fully 3D CGI.
Okay.
So under Lasseter's regime, they produced Tangled.
Sure.
Which introduces the new style that we've seen through Frozen,
very
Frozen
much, yep.
2,
yeah, yeah.
Moana to a degree.
Yep.
Wreck-It Ralph.
Trying to think, when did Lilo and Stitch come out? That must have been just before.
That was just before. That was one of the last hand-drawn Cats movies. Frozen,
so
Big Hero 6, which really owns it.
But Big Hero 6 is good, and there was not a lot of fanfare about that movie. I really enjoyed that. That's actually a Marvel property, randomly, that has been turned into a Disney property.
Yeah.
Well,
it's wheels on wheels, mate.
It is wheels on wheels.
They'll just like buy each other.
But Big Hero 6, I really enjoyed that movie, I must say.
And Moana, most recently Frozen 2, but there was also
a whole bunch
of...
That's Lasseter's last producer credit.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Yeah. There was also a whole bunch of hand-drawn stuff in the mix.
Right.
None of which I've written down, that's helpful. But take my word for it.
But this is the thing, it's like, I always get mixed up between the Disney animated movies, like it's Inside Out... Is a Pixar.
That's Pixar.
But Frozen is a Disney,
yes.
Not a Pixar. Brave is a Pixar.
Is it? I thought Brave was Warner
Brothers.
Brave
is a Disney.
Brave is Pixar.
Brave is Pixar, but she's a Disney princess. It's all very...
We might have to blooperify this, but yeah, all right. What else you got? You've got Ratatouille, which I always thought was Disney, but it's actually Pixar.
Yeah, that's Pixar. That's amazing.
Although, hilariously, well, we'll talk about Ratatouille in a second.
They should definitely make Ratatouille, right? Just because the name is right there. Ratatouille.
So how does it all work?
What's it all about, Alfie?
What's it all about, Alfie?
Well, they get a stylus, and then they get an iPad, and they're like... And then it's like Mickey riding a horse.
Okay, yeah.
Nailed it. Shout it down.
So making a CGI animation is, in a lot of ways, very similar to making a traditional animation.
Okay.
They start with a storyboard.
Sure.
Because whilst it is... Well, no, actually, it is just as expensive, if not more expensive, to animate CGI frame by frame than it was cell by cell.
Yeah. But the money is in the computers, not in the labour of the person drawing it?
I mean, it's still in the labour of the person drawing it, as you'll find out in a moment. Right, okay. So the first thing that they do is, generally speaking, the first thing they do is they lay down an audio track.
Right.
Audio first.
Yep.
I haven't checked, actually, because remember in the cell one, the Japanese do it the other way around.
Yeah, Miyazaki does it the other way around, definitely. Yeah.
But, well, yeah. So the audio gets laid, and then...
Good for the audio.
Yeah. Makes me, at least one of them is... Videos just sat there at home. It did kill the radio star, though. So.
Yeah, exactly. What do you expect?
No, the first step is post-audio is modelling.
Okay.
So 3D is based around the concept of models set in a scene.
Okay.
And modelling is basically... A model is a combination of... And I've got it written down here. Geometric vertices, faces and edges.
So do they start with a wireframe and then add stuff around it, right?
What they actually start with is, even now, they start with primitive shapes.
Okay.
And then they basically start cutting away at them.
Literally like sculpting.
Literally like sculpting clay.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reason they have to do that is because a 3D model is made up of mathematical shapes.
Yes, sure.
And you can represent a cube.
Yeah.
You can represent a sphere or a torus.
All right.
And then you can represent the intersection of a torus with a sphere, for example, and that will give you a cut of a certain point.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And you have to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. So it has to be built up in this way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not like they can just sit there and grab an iPad and...
They can't just draw Mickey on a horse.
Well, they probably can these days because the tools are incredibly powerful.
Sure, okay.
But what they're still boiling down to is this idea of a series of coordinates and shapes that intersect.
Yeah.
And some of them just remove stuff and some of them add stuff and away you go.
Right.
The next thing that we have to do is, generally speaking, models in and of themselves are not just a flat colour or even a series of flat colours, so they have to be textured.
Yeah, of course.
And texturing, literally, we could do an entire podcast episode on texturing, to be honest. Okay. It's incredibly involved. It's very artistic, as you would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
One of the common tricks that animators use is a concept called bump mapping.
Right.
And this is the idea that... So, say, for example, if you look at the table in front of us, we're sat in front of a lovely table in JB's, and it's kind of chipboard.
Yeah.
And you know that all of the different bits of this chipboard, all of the different elements of the lighter colour and the darker colour, are because, firstly, we've got different wood in there, but also there's texture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Animating texture, if you had to carve every single little groove...
Of course.
Would take forever.
So laborious.
And the model would be incredibly complex and very expensive to render.
Right, okay.
So what they actually do is just take a photo...
Right.
And add a certain layer to say this area is light reactive.
Oh, wow.
So when they actually then come to render it...
Yeah, yeah.
It looks incredibly realistic and rich and deep, but it's actually flat.
Wow, okay. Okay. It's just a very high quality photo with
even
the light refraction.
Yeah, even beyond that. There are certain points that they can highlight. But it's all to do with light manipulation, but it's this bit, make it shine.
Mm.
And the concept of the ray trace, which we'll come onto in a moment, is like the final step of animation where they actually introduce light.
Right.
But you can do all sorts of tricks if you know, for example, where it's going to be set in the scene and where the light's going to be shone from.
So that's... Do you remember way back when... in the Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the bumping the lamp thing.
Yeah.
The difficulty they had animating in a live action space was that the light source wasn't always a fixed point.
No, because the light moves, you're doing hand drawn animation, which means you've got to keep up with it.
Yeah, exactly. But then presumably that's more complicated again if you're trying to do that against a 3D model, which you've added photographic texture to as well.
Absolutely. Mm. So the next step, we've got our models, we've got our textures, but they are static.
Right.
And they'll normally be in a preset pose, depending on what they are.
Right.
So people tend to be like this.
Right, sure, yeah.
Sorry, for the benefit of our listeners at home, I've got my arms out.
The arms out to the sides.
Imagine Da Vinci's,
Vitruvian Man. Yes.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And they then need to break the model up into a series of deformation points.
Okay.
So if you think about how many joints you have, how many different ways you can move.
Right, okay.
But you move around a fixed set of
For the listener, rules. Rob is currently doing a little dance.
I'm doing a little shimmy.
You did a little, shimmy. You did a little shimmy to illustrate that.
So they need to break up the models in the same way. Look at Toy Story is a brilliant example. So because they have physical joints that are actually...
So is that part of the... That was easier to animate because they've bound at the elbow and at the wrist, but there's no other real...
Yeah,
they don't move the same way as a human
The
does.
Weird thing is they do it for ease because if you look at a puppet in Toy Story, you expect its arm to only move one way.
Yeah, yeah.
But then very conveniently, all of a sudden, he gets radial movement in his wrist when he needs to.
Yeah, it's like... that is one of my things with Frozen was Olaf. He pulls his arm off at one point and it's a stick. And then at other points, it's like, no, that's an arm and a hand. And he's like moving...
Yeah.
But also magic, so whatever, you know. Probably,
he's a magic snowman.
Probably... arguing that the magic snowman's arms are unrealistic.
Not to go back to Frozen, but I do love the bit where he slaps him in the face.
That is very good.
It's a bit. You see it coming. It's amazing.
Nobody got a laugh. Absolutely.
So once the deformation has been applied to the model, you have something that can be moved around.
Yeah.
And what they'll normally do is take that model, they'll run it through its paces. So no background, nothing else. They'll just get it to do whatever that character would do.
Right,
to make
okay.
sure that they've got the animation points right.
Okay.
And what they tend to do is introduce a whole bunch of control points.
Right.
To say, well, actually, this is where we'll need to move them from.
Okay.
Now, bizarrely, this is a concept in 3D animation that's referred to as rigging.
Okay.
Which is also a theatre thing, but completely different.
Okay.
One of them involves lights and ropes, and the other one involves manipulating 3D models. So they put controllers and handles in, and basically the handles are points that you can grab and move.
Right,
so it's,
okay.
The idea is that you can actually, anything, you can model, and if you take a stick man, you would put the handles on the ends of the limbs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you would also put joints in at the elbow
sure
and the knee.
So they move correctly and look right. And is that including the texturing and the light and that kind of stuff as well, or is that before they
actually
add
all that? It's actually done, all of these things are kind of done in parallel.
Concurrently,
but normally they will have a fairly good rough cut of what the model's going to be wearing before they start animating it.
Of course, yeah. Okay.
Because otherwise it could look ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And bear in mind, the model itself, they've gotten very good at doing it, but the model is the exterior view only. So if you think back to Frozen, where you have, at the end of Let It Go, Elsa has transformed herself.
Yes.
And all of a sudden gets a mega shimmy on. She gets a real sachet.
Which and you've got...
Yeah, but there's if you look at that shot, there are hip bones, there are knees.
Well,
you can see the outline of her leg.
As my wife put it when she changed the dress, she went, she suddenly got hips and tits.
Yeah, exactly so. But none of those things actually exist.
No, of course.
It's not like they clothe the model.
No, of course.
The model
is
the dress.
Yeah, yeah.
With feet.
Of course, yeah.
Anyway.
The model is the dress with feet. I love that as a soundbite just to send to the fashion industry.
The model is the dress with feet.
Oh, Versace, calm down. So dismissive.
Gautier's over there. I agree, the fucking model is there. Dresses with his feet.
I've never met a model, but, you know.
I'm trying to think if I have.
I met some male models from Hugo Boss at a wedding once that I accidentally
Were they incredibly well... What?
I was outside having a cigarette at a wedding and speaking to these gentlemen who were, like, in safari suits, like Roger Moore in the 70s Bonds. And they looked really nice, and I'd had a few drinks, and I was like, you guys look amazing, what's happening? And then I heard a couple of days later, what someone at the bride said to me, was there someone outside with all my friends from Hugo Boss? Because, like, two of them said they thought they met somebody that they thought they pulled. Who was it they were talking to outside? And I was like, oh, that was me. That was me. They looked nice. I told them they looked nice. It wasn't a...
And this is the problem. This day and age is so
one
complicated.
One guy outside of a bar... It's a minefield.
You barely cupped him.
You spend one weekend in Aspen with a group of models after a wedding, and they're like, oh, he led me on. Anyway, talking of John Lasseter.
So?
This has gone off the rails like a retired train.
They don't go off the rails, they just stop. They get pushed into a siding somewhere.
Don't take it up with me. Anyway, right, so...
So after we've done
I
the rigging,
a story about how I sexually harassed some models once by accident.
No, it's fine. I'm sure they enjoyed it massively.
Yeah, I mean, look at me. Why wouldn't they? Them male models, Hugo Boss, me.
Well, yeah, but they see gorgeous men all the time.
It's true.
How often do they see you?
Change is as good as a rest.
Right.
So you were saying something about rigging, Ron.
Rigging is really easy to think of in terms of major movements, limbs.
Yeah.
But don't forget, an awful lot of the modern animation deals with the face. And the modelling of the face is actually quite complicated because it needs to be incredibly dynamic and expressive.
Unless it's Lion King.
Unless it's the new Lion King.
Yeah.
In 1976, there was actually a system developed called the Facial Action Coding System.
Facts.
Yeah. And facts, just the facts, man. Facts provides 46 action units or points that can be animated against.
So it's points of articulation that they can...
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's more animations that you just have to include. Right. So smile, frown, lip bite, squint... wide-eyed awe. And the thing was, they thought, well, basically, rather than defining the various control points, because there's no point, it's 1976, no one's doing this, these are what you need to have on a face.
Right.
And this was actually used in traditional animation. So they go to the book and say, oh, they need to look shocked. What does shock look like? And they go to the book and it's like, oh,
Wow, okay. I don't know what that was. It wasn't shocked.
That was sex doll shocked.
That was, I've sat on something and I need to see a doctor.
Also shocked.
Oh, yeah. I mean, shock is certainly a part of that. Yeah, that's true.
So, MPEG 4.
Yes.
Which I'm pretty sure, I can never remember what the E stands for. It's the Motion Picture Something Group. Engineering Group? Maybe? Anyway, MPEG 4 was the fourth version of their standard.
We had that conversation on this podcast in the booth over there.
Yeah.
And you told me, and I can't remember.
I can't remember. It doesn't
the
matter.
Motion Picture.
These are the same guys that brought us MP3.
Yes.
But yeah, the fourth version included 68 facial animation parameters.
Wow.
Unfortunately, it was literally called the Facial Animation Parameter System.
FAPS! It's your basic FAPS. It's your basic FAPS system. It's all about the facial expressions. How true that is.
What do you think his facial looks like? I don't know. What does FAPS say?
What were you doing? Look, I was fapping. You told me to go. I was in the middle of consulting fap. That's how I'm going to refer to it. What did you do when Karina went out last night? Oh, well, I consulted fap for about an hour and a half.
And then got my face
candle,
right.
I lit a candle, cooked myself a nice dinner, and then consulted fap for a bit. I consulted the fap Bible.
Oh, dear.
Is that where the term O-face comes from, then?
No, but there's probably a reference to it in the FAP book. It's not even a book anymore, is it? It'll be a website.
Yeah, it will be a digital. There's going to be a digital FAP repository.
Please, somebody, see if you can find out. Just type FAP into Google and let us know what comes.
Somebody Google FAP database and just let us know what pops up.
Now, when we're talking about facial animation, we also have to mention something. In animation, it's referred to as the uncanny valley.
Yes, of course, yes.
You've heard of this.
So it's like the more realistic they look, the weirder it looks to the human eye.
Yeah, basically, it's the less we will resonate and empathise with.
Right, okay, yeah.
Which is, bizarrely, why even in Frozen and, you know, these modern animated movies, the characters are still incredibly stylized.
Yeah, so they've still got the big eyes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's not because they can't do realistic. They just haven't quite got out of the valley yet.
They have that thing of, there's like the Chinese Newcastles, which are 100% CGI built, and you can't tell the difference.
This is the thing, is we are now out of the valley,
like deepfakes
and we can do completely photorealistic human animation.
Yeah.
But Disney still maintain that actually it's a fantasy, it's meant to be
something reality adjacent. That isn't the point of doing it, is it? I mean, the point of watching Frozen isn't to see live-action people do it, otherwise they just shoot a live-action film.
Right, so we're done with our modelling.
Sure. We're done with fapping.
Yeah, we fapped and had a bit of a lie down.
Drank some Lucozade, get some electrolytes.
It's time for posing, blocking and splining.
Oh, yeah. I've literally just fapped, so, I mean, give me 15 minutes.
Well, you should have saved yourself, because
posing,
you've
blocking.
Now got to pose.
You say splining?
Splining.
Sure. Is that from the organ, the spline?
Weak sauce, mate. Weak sauce. The first thing is that a given scene is set.
Right.
With the model set in key poses.
Right.
And literally, this is the initial set up, and mm-hmm. then they will move through to the next major static point.
Right.
They then basically do a rough animation.
So then, yeah.
where they block in between to make sure that it all makes sense.
Yeah, because they work out, he has to get from A to B.
Yeah.
But then he's got to work out how to get from A to B with them all moving around. And that's blocking, which is how you design a, like a director film.
So
or a theatre.
Exactly the same thing.
Is it more like theatre or more like film?
Both.
Yeah, it's a little bit both, isn't it, actually?
Yeah, you've got to hit your marks either way.
Yeah.
Now, the in-between elements, so they render this incredibly roughly.
Yep.
I know that 2 weeks ago you were talking about the fact that Disney show rough animations of work in progress.
Like, what do they call them?
Probably the kind of stuff that... Well, animatics goes way back. That was the original, like, pencil sketches that they just photographed.
Okay.
Same thing. Right. So the stuff that they're watching isn't close to finished quality.
Yeah, of course.
It requires that you kind of engage your imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're professional animators, so I'm sure they know what it would look like.
They can figure it out, If the digital animators at Disney and Pixar can't use their imagination to fill in the gaps, they wouldn't be Disney and Pixar.
Now, the in-between frames between the various block points are splined, which is a combination of 3D movement, and just basically it's tweening, it's in-between motion.
Right.
How do you get from this frame, this block, to this block?
Right, okay, right.
But it's coarser than pure tweening.
Right.
Because the blocks themselves can actually be like a second apart.
Coarser than pure tweening, name of my book.
And then basically they go over and over and over this process. They'll redo, retweak, and they smooth the movement.
Right, okay.
They'll introduce a whole bunch of little elements, offsets.
Right.
Offsets are an animational trick whereby you'll... Probably when you're blocking the thing out, if you need to have both arms in the air, you'll just put both arms in the air at the same time.
Right, yeah, fair, yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
in reality, they will actually raise one
sides.
More slowly,
yeah.
and it's slightly off, because it makes it more human and more real.
Yeah, of course.
And then finally, after all of that, the scene is given an initial production render.
Right.
When everything will come together. So
that's
the textures
all the
applied.
Stuff, the lighting
all of
done.
The lighting and the ray tracing is done.
Yeah.
All of the blocking, splining, and
once they've
tweening
got the model,
is in place.
Because they're all working off the same model, whether it's the texture, lighting, movement, whatever. So then they just apply it to a master model, essentially, and layer it all on top of each other.
Well, don't forget, the lighting will be scene-specific. So it's based on the model, but also on the scene that they're in.
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course.
And this is done scene by scene by scene.
Oof. Yeah.
Well, nobody ever said animation was easy.
No, indeed. But they've surprisingly short productions on a lot of these Disney. Frozen had like 18 months or something.
Yeah, but
they
have. Because
they do everything at the same
a
time.
A ridiculous team of people working on it.
Yes, of course. The best people in the world all working at the same time.
Yeah.
Presumably the world's greatest project manager, making sure they're all hitting
marks. The big difference being that unlike cell animation, where it was a linear process, you had to draw the cell, then fill the cell, then composite, then photo. Yeah, the CGI process, you can have all of the blocking and splining going on with stick figures if you want.
Yeah.
Whilst the modelling team is still working.
Yeah.
And the texturing team can come in later on again and say, this one or this one, red tie or the blue tie.
Yeah.
So it can all run in true parallel. There's a lot of discussion and argument in the wonderful world of CGI about whether or not you use reference footage.
Right.
And effectively rotoscope your 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether or not you use motion capture.
Right.
Disney have famously never used mocap for any of their significant future releases.
Yeah, fine, yeah.
I'm not sure about Pixar, but certainly up to Ratatouille, there was a whole big thing. Even at the end of Ratatouille, there was actually a thing at the bottom of the credits.
Right.
Said 100% animated.
Right.
No humans were involved in the making of this picture.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's
kind
of bullshit, because they were doing the animation. But anyway...
Yeah.
Obviously,
but they're not like mo-capping faces and that kind of stuff or anything like that at all. It's all purely animated.
And again, it's Disney. They're not old-fashioned, traditional.
Yes.
They have always liked the idea that you create this representation of the world from
scratch. It's more to do with their philosophy and culture than it is to do with any... You know, I mean, lots of people do motion capture.
There's meanwhile, we've got Peter Jackson over there motion capping every living fucking thing
exactly,
that moves.
Yeah. Motion capturing Benedict Cumberbatch's face to put onto a dragon.
It's kind of cool, though.
It is cool.
So, very quickly, let's talk about mocap.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because it's not something that Disney really use yet, but they inevitably will.
Well, they do now that they own Marvel.
Well, the main reason being that it provides you with, rather than having to model and block and tween and do all of this by hand, it gives you a solid base reference.
Yeah.
You know, that person moved in this way, we just put it straight into the model. Blah.
All the new Planet of the Apes films.
Yep.
I mean, famously incredible, you know.
Well, this is Serkis, right? Yeah, who's basically Captain MoCap.
Captain MoCap, yeah.
Maybe General MoCap at this point.
All of the Avengers movies, all of the Marvel movies, all of the Star Wars movies now. I mean, there are a few movies. Anything which has got a fantastical element to it in a live-action environment is MoCap these days, pretty much. Even Rocket Raccoon. Even that is a lot of MoCap on that.
MoCap has its limitations.
Okay,
which
they're
rapidly beating as hard as they can.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, you can't mocap something that you can't do physically. So if an actor can't do it, it can't be motion captured.
Yeah.
If you can't make the motion.
Yeah.
Which means that, as I said episode 2 weeks ago, the animators for Frozen 2, there's a whole scene where they get sucked up inside a tornado.
Right.
And to do that, they actually had to go back to reference footage and observation
to
get the movements right.
Yeah.
I don't really have a preference either way, to be honest. I haven't
really got a horse in the race. I think sometimes when they use both, so for example, with the Avengers movies and it's mocap, and then they suddenly start flying and doing fantastical stuff, it can be a bit like, whoa, that it wouldn't be if it was just one or the other. But I don't really have a horse in the race. I'm not enough of an animation head to.
I honestly don't mind. To be honest, they'll probably find, as with all things, we can get better movies faster if you use both.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to argue. If you watch that latest Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, whichever one it is, Rise of the Planet, whichever one of the latest one is, if you watch that.
I'm pretty sure it's Revenge or something.
I can't remember which one it is now. But yeah, regardless. It's very difficult to argue with mocap being good, given that the performance Andy Serkis gives in that film is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's truly incredible. Having said that, you know, Toy Story 3 is amazing and I love it. So, you know, horses for courses, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's art.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to capture an actor doing a certain thing and then map that onto something that's 100 times bigger. Right.
But
if you want to traditionally model in 3D a character doing something and you do all of the rigging and all of the setup by hand, great.
Mm.
If you want to film somebody crossing the street on 8mm, fine, go for your life.
But I think it's different things for different things as well. So like Andy Serkis playing Caesar in those movies is about a performance and it's about conveying emotion, but he's still a monkey, which would be much harder to do if you just purely animated that, as opposed to an ape which can.
You say that, Josh Gad playing a snowman.
Yeah, but I don't think that Josh Gad playing a snowman conveys the same level of emotion as Andy Serkis does in three Planet of the Apes films of Caesar.
You haven't seen the second one.
No, I haven't seen the second one. That's true. That's very true.
But no. Anyway,
I'm comfortable
I think we're agreeing with each other in general terms.
So, we're just going off tangent,
A whole bunch of other techniques, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because unless you're an animator, you'll find it very dull. The two that are definitely worth mentioning are a concept of a particle system.
Right, okay.
So an awful lot of animation...
You're looking at me like, please know what this is, you son of a bitch.
No, an awful lot of animation is incredibly hard to do because it's not just a primitive.
Right.
And it can't be carved from.
Sure, okay.
You know, if I wanted to model you, I could put a blob on top of a blob.
Three
and then some
legs
longer
of ham
blobs
on
and...
top of each other and just go to town with a chisel and a fork.
at the same time, I would struggle when I came to your hair.
Sure.
I could bump map it, but that would be a cheat.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't move.
Yep.
I mean, to be fair, your hair does.
My hair doesn't move. I've got Lego Man hair, Rob.
You know, the guys from Spidey are going to be giving you a call. It's like, how does he make that? Because we want that for the helmets.
Yeah, exactly.
Particle systems deal with, well, particles,
right,
which
are
an amazing part of so many movies that you never see.
So you're talking about, like, things in the background, like smoke and hair moving and...
So things in the background, things in the foreground.
Right, yeah.
Things that are at the centre of a movie, things that are completely incidental too.
Right.
So, motes of dust flying around in an abandoned warehouse.
Yeah.
In a 3D animated world, those have to be animated using a particulate system.
A movie that we both love,
go on.
At the end of Last Jedi, when the salt is being scratched off the ground to reveal the red floor.
Yes.
That's that kind of particle animation you're talking about.
And
used a great effect, I think we can all agree.
That scene, I will give you.
Okay, fair enough.
Mostly because it's near the end, so we're almost out of it.
Anyway, yeah.
And yeah, literally smoke, snow, water, all of these effects are derivations on particle systems, derivations on something called MDM,
right.
Which we talked about 2 weeks ago, so feel free to go and listen to us not explain it then. And we finally have the concept of the fact that particles don't exist in isolation.
Sure.
They react to stimuli.
And to each other.
And to each other.
Mm.
So this is the basis of the flocking system that we talked about in Lion King.
Like flocks of birds, yeah.
Well, flocks of birds in the traditional... are they the thrushes that kind of flock?
Yes, they move crazy like that, yeah. Or is it starlings?
Yeah, waves. Starlings. No, you're quite right. But equally, that kind of mathematical model is applied to snow flurries, to sputum coming off of waves.
Yeah, eddies in water. And
exactly
like that.
So.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And that's another... It's not quite a modelling element, because the things being moved are probably models.
That's all the stuff that if it didn't look right, it would look weird and you wouldn't know why.
And weirdly, we have way more tolerance for that kind of stuff to be a little bit fantastic or what have you, than we do for a face to be slightly off.
Yeah, yeah.
But equally, yeah, if the snow doesn't fall right, yeah, or the water doesn't pour right, we're like, oh, well, this animation's
well,
shit.
That's why they had to invent all those tools for Frozen,
you know,
we talked about 2 weeks. Like
the
kind of
Lucas redo of the entire Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
When animation just doesn't quite look right.
Why does Yoda look weird?
Why does Yoda look weird? Because he's short, green, and hairy.
But that's very funny that I like about that, that like Yoda looks like Yoda looks like, but then when they replace him with a CGI Yoda, everyone's like, that looks weird. Yeah, man. It's Yoda. No, but it's not the right. It's like the uncanny, it's Valley Uncanny in the case of Yoda.
The fact that we can hit the uncanny valley with a character that was basically animatronic is fairly impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, that's our eyes and our brains are strange and wonderful things.
Mm.
So,
we've got some stranger parts, but sure.
Are you ready for the amazing fact?
I am. It's been pretty amazing so far, so once again, got to top yourself. I mean, don't top yourself, but you know what I mean. This podcast's been pretty good. Better kill yourself. Anyway, go on, Rob.
I'm going outside. I may be some time.
Oh, boy. Anyway, cue the jingle.
So for the Pixar movie, at this point, I think Disney Pixar movie, Toy Story 3.
Yarp.
Every frame in that movie took between 7 and 39 hours to render.
Right. 7 and 39
7
hours.
To 39.
Wow. Okay.
The average frame took 7 hours to render.
Right.
Some of the frames took 39 hours.
Jesus. Okay.
And that's on Pixar's render farm.
And that's like a 2-hour film at least.
It is.
Love they've got a render farm.
Yeah.
All the tiny renderers running around.
The amazingness here is it means that if you wanted to render a single pass of that film.
Right.
To production standard, to release standard, it would take a total of 1,038,240 hours, or 117 years.
So how did they render it then?
Well, firstly, they weren't rendering it in sequence, they were rendering it in parallel.
Okay,
so
right, okay.
A lot of the film would go into the render up at the same time.
Right, sure, yeah.
But what's more amazing than that, the fact that it would take 117 hours if you just did it one at a time, is the fact that they probably did this maybe a dozen times.
Yeah, of course, they must have.
With all the different recuts, rough cuts, you know, the pre-releases.
So the amazing fact is that the render farm for Pixar has got the world's biggest carbon footprint. It needs a lot of cooling there, doesn't it? Jesus
it
Christ.
It does, and it's based in the US, so it's not like they farmed it out. Sorry, render farmed it out.
Render farmed it out.
to...
Probably in Burbank, you know, where it's like never not 90 degrees. Jesus.
I think they're a lot just down, but yeah.
That's insane.
So there you go. That's your amazing fact. When it comes to CGI, it is not only is it a massive amount of work, it's incredibly computer intensive.
And arduous just to get through to make it look right at the end. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Go back to drawing on film.
Imagine
at least that just explodes.
Rendering it and then sitting down and being like, is his hand round the wrong way? Like, he's got a left hand for a right hand and a right hand for a left hand.
No, he's got two left hands.
Exactly. Oh. God damn it. Wait, is Woody got a Woody?
How did that happen? Why did we even put control surface in there?
Somebody had to rig that, had to light it, had to, frankly, let's be real, get some
texture
kind of get a reference.
I think we know where they got the reference from.
Oh, yeah.
The FAPS.
The FAPS system.
What does the future hold for animation? Well, we've touched on a couple of bits of it.
Yeah.
Not least of which the fact that we can now do pure photorealism.
Yeah.
Purely out of a computer.
Yeah.
The I can't really not mention things like the whole AI deepfake trend.
Yeah, that is
where
you
can legit model.
You've seen the Bill Hader one where he turns into Tom Cruise and stuff while he's doing the impression? It's very unsettling, yeah. Yeah.
And again, with so many of these technical deep dives, it comes down to that constant exponential increase in processing power. So bear in mind that when I was referencing The Amazing Fact, that was Toy Story 3, which came out in 2016?
2015. Yeah.
So we're 5 years on, because it's now 2020.
and
that means that
it's
the computing power has doubled, quadrupled, octupled, sextupled, 32-pulled.
32-pulled. The old 32-pulled.
I give him the old 32. and that's going to mean that basically the things that we can do in animation are only going to keep getting more and more crazy.
But I think we will definitely always be a place for stuff like Toy Story and that kind of animation. But I think animation, given the deep fake and the photorealistic stuff, I think animation might start to mean something a bit different as well going forward. So, I mean, at this point, is there any reason they couldn't just do a photorealistic animated Avengers film?
No.
There's not, right? They must have enough reference scans of all the people that are in the Avengers to do that.
Well,
they're really talking about putting James Dean in a fucking movie recently, aren't they?
And to be fair, they've got a bunch of reference footage. They can run it through the systems to recreate all the bits they don't have.
But it'll also be another thing on things like the aging Robert De Niro in The Irishman and things like that. Like, they'll use animation. And, you know, don't make no mistake, that is definitely animation. You can't...
I'd say it's definitely CGI.
Like, well, they have to animate the face.
No,
it's motion
capture, his face.
It's motion capture in there.
No, it's his face.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's computer-enhanced imagery, if
they
you
have
will.
Given him blue eyes for some reason.
Oh, old blue eyes.
Very strange. Very unnecessary. But anyway. But I think it would just start to mean a slightly different thing, really.
Yeah.
But it will all be normal and we'll be like, I remember Frozen 2. Do you remember when they're in a tornado? They made parachutists jump out of them. Like, what? What's a parachutist?
What's a plane?
What's a plane? Yeah.
We don't allow carbon anymore. We haven't flown in years. We live in a village.
Tell me about the world, Grandad, when it wasn't on fire. Anyway, we'll get maudlin at the end, quick. Listen to the podcast.
And on that note.
But yeah, no, I think it's amazing. I really do. And I think, but I do think there will always be a place for your Frozens and your Disney and your that kind of stuff. But I just think there'll be new
artistic
things.
Artistic use of animatic tools versus the very, very scary potential for those tools to be massively misused.
Yeah, I mean, those deepfakes of, like, getting Obama to say all sorts of weird stuff and that kind of stuff. Putting Steve Buscemi's face on Jennifer Lawrence's body for an award ceremony was one of the creepier things I've ever seen. But yeah, but it's like
there's
everything.
Just no need. There's no need.
It's every technology we've ever talked about on this podcast. People are going to do bad stuff with it, and people are going to do good stuff with it. It just is, unfortunately. This has been the deep dive into modern animation, CGI animation. We've been recording in JB's, drinking extremely good Buxton Brewery Yellowberry Belly beer, and now something that tastes like a donut. So that's nice. Don't know. Tastes like a donut and I'm a bit more drunk, so brilliant. Join us next month when we continue 2020 by talking about something a grown-up would watch for once. Another cool shit.
It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
That is one bit where I was trying to be creepy to Rob, and it ended in just a normal Elton John's coming around to your house for Christmas.
Ironically, he is driving home for Christmas.
Really? Yeah. That is. He stepped in some dog shit and had to clean his shoe when he got there. Are you doing the beginning of Under the Sea?
You know that one in the Academy Award?
What? Which one?
Under the Sea.
Did it?
Yeah.
Well. Recording. Let's do it in harmony. Ready? Where do you want to go, high or low?
I'll go low.
Okay, I'll go high.
One, two, three.
Recording. Counterpoint. No, that's just a harmony, isn't it?
No, I think that was counterpoint. We were singing completely different notes, and I'm pretty sure completely different things. At completely different times.
It's beautiful. I like how we did it so quietly and for such a short time was looking out into the pub to go, no one's noticing us doing this, okay. This is the best day of my life.
He's scowling, but his eyes are smiling.
Exactly. Your forehead says no, but your face says, I want a slice of that sweet meat. Oh, God. Well,
you thought you'd order a shit sandwich, but the butt is very much operational.
Yeah.